Welcome to the Queensland Economy Watch special coronavirus edition. My name is Gene Tunney. Joining me today is the Chief Economist of CCIQ, Dr. Marcus Smith, to speak with me about the economic impact of coronavirus and also the impact of coronavirus on the Queensland budget. Marcus, thanks for coming on to the podcast again.
Pleasure, Gene. Great to be back.
Excellent. Okay. Marcus, we've got quite a few things to chat about, given that today we had the release of the March labour force numbers, but it seems that those numbers that were released today aren't really telling us much about the impact of coronavirus. Would you be able to take us through those numbers, please?
Yeah, certainly. The survey for the March is done, fairly early in the month. So across that, there was a lot of time there and where during the month where the closures hadn't occurred and the social distancing measures. So the March figures, particularly for Queensland, were quite good. It seemed to be quite resilient, but we could certainly expect those numbers to come off fairly significantly over the next couple of months in particular, especially a lot of the indicators we're seeing out there and also the sentiment. So there were a number of things released as well. The ABS previously, a few days ago in the week, released their latest survey, which is essentially towards the end of March, start of April for that week. And we're seeing quite significant implications there across different industry sectors, and that's nationally. It's not broken down by state, but we've seen some significant hits to hospitality. It was almost unanimous that 90% or so of the respondents were said they'd been affected, and that their cash flows had been affected quite significantly. The things that they were sort of discussing, where we can sort of see where employment's going, as that accommodation sort of, that's the tourism and hospitality sector in particular. We know tourism's been closed down, which is quite an important economic sector for the state of Queensland in particular. And we've also got a fairly large education sector as well, which has been implicated from those the visitor impacts, particularly from China. So the survey indicated that the businesses, in particular, as I mentioned, have been affected quite significantly. Some of them that they've generally been responding operationally by changing the delivery methods, in particular moving towards online services, changing the quantity of their orders and inputs, and introducing new products. They're also dealing with the financial arrangements by renegotiating the rent and lease arrangements with their landlords, accessing the deferred loan repayments and, trying to get in there now and take the advantage of some of the measures, those loans, particular for Queensland. Obviously, the Queensland government loan will be one that a lot of businesses will be looking to use to be able to hibernate, but also to make the payments. New information's come out with regards to the JobKeeper package. So essentially, businesses are expected to make the payments, 2 weeks, two payments before they're actually paid themselves. So they might have to access some finance or some facility there, either with the banks themselves or through these loans. So almost one half of businesses reported adjusting their workforce arrangements. So wherever a quarter of businesses reported responding by reducing hours and placing their staff on leave or standing staff down. So large businesses were sort of standout. More of them reported increasing staff hours and hiring additional employees, which probably indicates because, a lot of those larger businesses are your supermarkets, etc.
Right. Just on that JobKeeper, are you saying that you have to start making the JobKeeper payment? So in cases where you end up having to pay more to the employees than you actually normally would because of the way this JobKeeper payment is set up, you have to pay that prior to getting the money from the Commonwealth. So is
yes.
right. Yes. That seems mm-hmm. a bit odd to me. That doesn't seem right to me.
No, well, we spoke to our bank, and they weren't aware of, because we asked them for a facility for it. Because also the businesses are also expected to update their latest accounts, which aren't due yet, their financials, which aren't due yet. So a lot of businesses have been sort of scrambling to get those up to date as well. But, you know, there's going to be that period, and when we spoke to the bank, they weren't aware of it. But when you, it's obviously a very quickly moving, you know, coming into the, where the government only previously had asked people to express interest, and now they're only starting to hear back about, you know, going forward and making the applications and within their, what they've, the information they put out, you know, we're going to expect banks should have to come to, you know, some sort of arrangement to provide that finance over the meantime until that payment's made. In May. So.
Right. Oh, wow, I'll have to have a closer look at that. I was worried about the complexity of that JobKeeper package when I first saw it, and it wasn't clear to me just how much, if any, benefit I would get out of it myself. In fact, I may not get any benefit out of it because it depends on your turnover, doesn't it, and whether that's
yeah.
fallen by a particular amount.
Yeah, by 30%.
So. But look, no, at least the government has recognised that the measures that it has brought in with the social distancing has had a massive impact on the business environment, and it is trying to do something. So credit to them for that. Mm-hmm. Marcus, just on the unemployment again. So what they did is when they collected the data from the households, that was in early March, and it was prior to the big hit that came that Sunday night in late March when Scott Morrison announced that all of the pubs and clubs and restaurants and cafes would have to close except for takeaway service. So none of that impact is in the labour force data, which still show unemployment nationally. Is it 5.2% or something like that?
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
And yep.
Steady.
Can you recall what it is in Queensland in March, what it
yep.
was?
It's 5.66%, so 5.7%. So it's actually, on a trend basis, it's come down, seasonally adjusted and on a regional basis. So unemployment went up and employment sort of fell over the month. But on that trend measure, because the trend measure goes back, obviously, a number across a series, a number of and essentially weights each of the months, so you sort of start to pick up those turning points, and it sort of smooths the data out quite significantly, you know, with the quite large adjustments. So yeah, essentially that was up to last month, you know, in February. That was over those periods. It was actually unemployment rate was tracking down, but this month here, you know, we might see, you know, we're obviously going to see that adjustment going forward. So we've still got the second highest unemployment rate in the country, you know, behind South Australia at 6%. But looking at the numbers all over, you know, Queensland fared quite well with the largest monthly employment growth there of 4,900 jobs. So it was 5,600 part-time, an increase in part-time employment. Which offset a decrease of 700 full-time positions, and that's on the trend basis that we generally tend to look at through the labour force data.
Yeah, but what we're going to see in the April figures, we're going to see a big drop in employment, a big increase in people unemployed and also not in the labour force, we'll potentially see 12% unemployment rate in Queensland, so a doubling of the unemployment rate, according to our Deputy Premier Treasurer, Jackie Trad, if I remember correctly. Is that your mm-hmm. sense of where we'll get to? We'll pretty quickly get to double-digit unemployment in Queensland and in Australia.
Yeah, well, I think so. And it comes down to the JobKeeper, how effective the JobKeeper package is. And, you know, you have to... It's great policy as it stands, but when you're thinking as a business owner, you know, especially when you've been hibernating for so long, and you know, you won't be looking to pay, probably keeping, you know, those people employed for 6 months, if that's how long the closure lasts. Because, you know, for people, the economy is not just going to bounce back, and there's not going to be the same demand that was in the economy before the, you know, before the coronavirus. So, you know, as a business owner, you're sort of looking forward and trying to judge essentially, you know, how many employees will you need, you know, once we open again. And, you know, you can think, you know, whether you're a gym or a cafe or and that, you know, where you've been closed down and your members are, you know, you've been getting cancellations, for example, and deferrals and stuff. How many of the members will, you know, how quickly trade will pick up again? You know, so essentially business owners are having to sort of try and think forward and negotiate where things are going to land in the future. So as I mentioned, it'll be how effective that JobKeeper package is and how businesses can, you know, can access it and, you know, and how engaged they'll be.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, and I agree with you. We're not going to see this V-shaped recovery, in my view. I think we'll see a U-shaped recovery. This shutdown, the social distancing measures and the closures of large parts of the economy, they will have a long-term impact. We're putting a lot of people out of business. We're causing a lot of financial hardship, and that is... the impacts of that will persist into next year, the year after, possibly. And look, we might have to keep the borders closed for another year or so. That's right. I don't know. And
that's right.
That's going to have a massive impact on tourism and international education. Now, we've done well here in Queensland historically we've done well out of tourism, and increasingly, we're doing well out. Well, we have been doing well out of international education. Where I am at the Johnson, just a couple of doors down, is the IES, the International Education Services. Their empire there, with all of the foreign students, they educate and to help them get into UQ, and that's just gone now, I think, for a year or so, because Those we can't keep those students. It's going to have a massive impact, and I don't think we're going to recover quickly. Right, Marcus, what do you think this means for the Queensland budget? So our Premier last Saturday, so Anastasia Palaszczuk, said that, well, obviously with the coronavirus impact, there's no way we can deliver this surplus. I think they were forecasting $151 million net operating balance, so a surplus for the operating budget. That's no longer there. We're going into deficit. Could you just explain what the different moving parts are in the budget, please, Marcus, and how bad you think it could be? Like, how is Queensland... how is the Queensland government placed to deal with this?
Well, when you're looking at the measures of revenue for the government itself, there's a lot of moving parts there. In particular, there's the general government revenue, which is taxation and fines and payments for licenses, fees, etc. All of these. So you've got that component. And you also got your dividends from your utilities, which feed into that. You've got a royalty system for in particular coal and, LNG and, the petroleum royalties there. Then you've got the payroll tax, with the reforms that are already having a negative, decreases, lifting the expenses anyway. That in place. You've also got stamp duties, which are sitting in there as well. So any sort of hit to the property markets and activity within sales of commercial and residential real estate, that source of revenue is going to essentially take a hit as well.
Okay. Could we just
and also if the values come down, that's going to take a hit. Now, you've got oil at $20 a barrel. You can, you know, we're obviously going to see some sort of impact on our petroleum royalties as well. You know, so all of the government also, it hasn't been taking as many fines with the social distancing, et cetera. So, it's going to be very difficult. Those revenues we're looking at around about $60 billion in, general government sector revenues. You also got the GST component, the redistribution from the Commonwealth Grants Commission for GST paid, across the country. That's forecast to fall. I think it was forecast to fall about $2.5 billion, I think. But that's about 47% of the government's revenue there. The pressures on the revenue side of the government's fiscal aggregates is under pressure.
Yeah. Okay. So let's just go through some of these, Marcus. So at the time of the mid-year fiscal and economic review, we had payroll tax revenue was expected this financial year to be $4.3 billion, I think. So we're going to lose hundreds of billions off that, I expect.
Mm-hmm.
Transfer duty was estimated to be around $3 billion. Again, possibly we'll lose another few hundred million. Then there's gambling taxes with fees, $1.4 billion. So we're going to lose hundreds of millions of dollars there. We're losing and all of that GST revenue. So you said, was it 2-point-something billion? That's over a few years, is it?
Yeah, yep.
Right, okay. And then they've enacted rescue measures amounting to several billions of dollars. Is that right? Was it $4 billion? Am I remember? Yep, okay.
Yeah, certainly. Just to start from,
Okay.
From looking from the outset. At the moment,
and we were already
we're at four. Anyone's guess.
Yeah. So I think at the time of the MIFA, were we projected to be getting up to around $90 billion in total debt in a few years' time? Is that right?
And certainly heading towards it. Yes.
Yeah. And so with what's happened, I mean, we'd have to be talking. One, heading towards $100 billion. Is that fair to say of total debt?
I think
debt?
That's fair to say. Yeah, I'd certainly think that's sort of fair to say at the moment. So, with the way things are shaping up to be looking like. So.
Okay. And how well placed do you think the Queensland government is at the moment to be able to deal with this, to be able to pay for these measures? Is that a concern at the moment?
Not just at the moment. We obviously the Standard and Poor's come out and assessed Australia's credit rating just recently, and we're still expecting from that material weakening from the budget. It's on negative watch, but we still retained reaffirmed our AAA rating there. The state government its rating fell, from the after the GFC, and essentially fell down to AA+, which is it's still quite a strong rating, with the rating agencies showing confidence in the state. But obviously they'll be taking a very close look at that going forward, especially with some sort of weakening across that budget. Where it's going to fit in, I don't see any problem. I know you spoke to Joe Brannigan, your colleague, well, a colleague from Treasury, about the implications about how governments raise money and through the debt markets by issuing those. So the state government debts are called semis, or they're sort of a municipal debt. So they come in, and obviously they're a little bit more risky than the Commonwealth government itself. Through the way that the vertical fiscal imbalance in Australia is essentially the federal government raises all the taxes, the income taxes, etc., whereas the state governments are predominantly responsible for all the deliveries and service and the infrastructure and service deliveries for each state. So there's that imbalance there. where they're limited because the state governments can't issue, where the RBA can go in and essentially purchase up if there's any problem with the Australian government issuing debts into the markets where foreign investors and banks and that won't buy them, and there's some sort of frictional or credit squeeze there where no one will buy those. The RBA can come in and electronically credit their exchange settlement accounts that they have with them and essentially create money and buy them out of the system to provide the liquidity. State governments are a bit different. They can't print their own money in the same way. But essentially, as far as foreign investors are concerned, there's an implicit understanding there that the Commonwealth government, if push comes to shove, will provide a guarantee to the states and to ensure that they, can maintain that liquidity.
Yeah, and that's what they did during the financial crisis. I well remember that. I was in the Treasury in Canberra at the time. And, one of the reasons I wrote my book, Beautiful One Day, Broke the Next, is I've always been concerned about Queensland's public finances. I think there are, a lot of risks with having the amount of debt we have because of, what you mentioned. The state isn't in the same position as the Commonwealth, whereby it can get the Reserve Bank to monetize the deficit, and its financing task is it can be more challenging than the Commonwealth's. And I remember the visits that we had in the Treasury. So we had visits from very senior officials in the Queensland Treasury and the Queensland Treasury Corporation pleading for Commonwealth assistance. And as a Queenslander and someone who remembered historically how well run Queensland was financially during successive governments, so both Conservative and Labor governments of the past, it just really shocked me to see that Queensland was in that position, and I hope it doesn't get into that position again. What is very encouraging is that if you look at the QTC website, and I think I emailed you that quarterly update, I'll put a link to it in the show notes. I think it's really encouraging. So QTC, prior to all of this economic carnage associated with the social distancing measures, it had already completed its funding task, its borrowing that it needed. Well, it expected that it would need in 2019-20 of $9.9 billion. It had already done that by late February, I think it was. And it had pre-funded $3.4 billion. So they've got money in the bank to help them get through this. I mean, it sounds like they might need a bit more, but it looks like they've been getting ready for this sort of thing. So we might be in a much better position, hopefully, than in the GFC. But look, depends on how long this lasts and just what those financial pressures are. It may be that the Commonwealth will need to step in again as it did during the financial crisis to help the states out. I don't have any... Yeah, no one's telling me anything at the moment. I don't have any special knowledge, but look, that possibly could happen. But look, there's some encouraging news that we have from QTC which suggests, at the moment, maybe things are okay, but let's see how everything develops. Is that fair?
Yeah, definitely. And just sort of adding to that, I think if you have a look at the outstanding maturities of a lot of the debt, it is very sort of fairly a lot of it is gauged towards the sort of the near term side of the curve. Most of the bulk of the outstanding bonds, the debt. So that'll obviously have to be rolled over, but when you look at the yield curve for Queensland, it is upward sloping. As a result of that, essentially it's still very cheap to borrow as well. Within those markets, what they're issued for, their yields that are going for at the moment. Essentially going forward, even when they do roll this finance over, interest rates are still quite low. So, the risk is that there's a material change to the credit rating, which would obviously affect the credit worthiness, and investors sort of will respond to that. But you know, whether they're going to, you know, with the rates at the, you know, how low they are at the moment, you know, it's that sort of comes down. It's going to be a larger debt to finance, but essentially it's at a lower interest rate. So that's another point to, you know, keep in mind.
Yes. So I think I saw on the RBA website this morning, I had a look at their bond market data. They don't have the Queensland Treasury bond rates on it, but they have the New South Wales Treasury ones, and I think they can borrow at 1.67% for 10 years versus Australian government 0.93%. Now, we would be slightly above the New South Wales Treasury borrowing rate because of the fact we don't have the... They have a AAA credit rating, if I remember correctly. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so their credit rating's better than ours. And yep, they can borrow at a lower cost, but the actual
cost,
the spread between our bond rate and New South Wales, that's I think that's diminished over the years, so that the benefit of AAA isn't as great as it once was. But I'll try and dig up those figures somewhere. But you're right, look, you know, still a relatively low cost of borrowing.
So I've got some of those, the recent ones, because ANZ posted a lot of notices and updates, etc. So, you know, you're rolling into the Queensland Treasury Corporation 2021. It's got a coupon of 5.5 and 0.43% yield. You know, winding down to, if we're going to look for 10-year, you know, 2030, it's 3.5% coupon at 1.7% market yield.
Yeah.
You know, rolling out to 47 at you know, 4.2% coupon rate and 2.6% market yield. So.
Oh, right. If you could flick that on to me, please, Marcus, I might put it in the show notes if that's possible. I think that'd be good to have. Okay.
Yep.
Fantastic. Before we wrap up, anything else that is noteworthy that we should chat about today?
Yes, well, we're just about to close up the pulse, the quarterly for March. So we've had an enormous response rate, and we're going to have some quite good samples across you know, all the diverse regions. For each of our chambers have been very helpful with you know, putting that out across their members to respond. So we're looking at quite significant sample size for that. So obviously we're expecting to hear feedback from businesses. That will still be open for until tomorrow, I believe, or maybe over the weekend, and I'll be pulling that down on Monday to look at that. So there'll be a process, obviously, over you know, a month and a half or so before it'll be finalised. But yeah, that's something to certainly look forward to in future, Gene. But I'm sure we'll chat about that more in future. But you know, there's another day there if any business in Queensland wants to jump on and access the CCIQ Pulse Business, Suncorp CCIQ Pulse Business Service.
It's a great survey. Yes, yeah. And I expect you'll see similar massive declines in conditions and confidence as has been seen nationally with the NAB data. So they released their business conditions and confidence data early in the week, and that was a massive, massive drop. I might link to that in the show notes. So, yep, and the great thing about Pulse, so your Pulse survey, is you get all that excellent qualitative information, don't you? You get all the comments from businesses. And I expect they're going to be saying we need the economy to reopen. We need businesses to reopen as soon as possible. The challenge is, you know, looking after public health as well. And, you know, there could be a lot of disappointed people out there because everyone really wants to get back to business. We want to get back to business as usual. But we need to wait until we're absolutely sure we've got this community transmission under control and we're not going to have a second wave. Hopefully, you know, everyone understands that. It's hard. It's frustrating. We've all just got to push through as well as we can.
Mm-hmm.
Marcus, Thanks so much for your time. That was really informative. And, yeah, let's catch up again sometime in the future.
Pleasure, Gene. Anytime at all.
Excellent. Okay. Thanks, Marcus.